Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, live from the beautiful Topaz Meeting Room at the magnificent Hyatt Loop near the Galleria Houston, Texas Hotel and Brendan Berry's couch. It's the Constitution today. Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz. I am a professor of law at, where do I work again? Yeah, that's right, WMU Cooley Law School, Tampa Bay campus, and sooner or later, we will be joined by my compatriot, Brendan Berry, who is also a professor of law at the Tampa Bay campus of WMU Cooley Law School. And before we commence, I am supposed to advise everybody and remind everybody that what Brendan and I say on this broadcast is, in fact, our opinions and our opinions alone, except for the ones that we share. And they are not necessarily the opinions of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School, its faculty either individually or at large. And Brendan's not here, so I can't say good morning to him.
I'm here.
I don't know
Can
where
you hear
he
me?
Is. Oh, you're here.
Oh,
you're
he
here.
Is.
You're here.
Good morning.
You're here.
Yeah. You keep talking about me like I'm dead, for God's sake. What the heck? What's
no,
going
no.
On?
We just, I didn't even know if you were on the line. Okay. There are moments that I think that way, but today's not one of them. Okay.
Good Lord.
And I also want to introduce our very own Guillermo, okay, Hezieris. Okay.
Okay.
I don't think Hezie knows who
Guillermo
is. Guillermo,
I don't
know Guillermo.
Do
you know who
Guillermo
is? Guillermo's the guy, the funny little guy that's on the show with now I forgot his name. Was it Kimmel? Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, it's Jimmy
That's
Kimmel.
Guillermo.
Oh, yeah. That's Guillermo.
Okay,
that's right.
Our very own
I haven't watched that show in a
We're
long time.
We're going to send you out into the street to pull practical jokes on people, Hezie. Okay?
Okay. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
And it will be. We'll give you some real great gigs to do, you know, and you'll become a big star. Okay.
Okay.
Guillermo's a bigger star than Jimmy Kimmel is now. So that you know, normally I do my show from the confines of my beautiful condo on Bayshore Boulevard in Tampa, Florida. But I'm here in, and this is how we're going to start the show. We get a chance to talk. Oh, by the way, good morning, Brendan. How are you doing since the last 20 minutes?
I finally got around to saying good morning after announcing twice that I wasn't here. I'm doing fine.
Okay.
And it, hope you
know,
guys are doing
like
fine,
said,
too.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. Brendan is
Absolutely.
Live from Brendan's couch in someplace in Hillsborough County, Florida. I won't say where. Okay. we talked it ahead of time, and that's why I said, you know, for the last 20 minutes. How you been for the last 20 minutes? we start each of these little broadcasts on the Constitution today with what do we really think? And what I really think has absolutely nothing to do with the Constitution today, okay? Okay? It has to do with the fact that I'm still in Houston, Texas, okay? And the fact that I'm going to be in Houston, Texas, at least until Thursday, thanks to the wonderful efforts of Southwest Airlines. You remember them, right? I actually like Southwest Airlines, except for today. And for the second time, Southwest Airlines' entire system has been driven to its knees because of the weather, but also because of their ineptitude.
I read that
technologically
they're out of date. The systems are out of date.
And that's only part of it. Their systems are out of date. That's true. But the other part of the problem is that they don't have all the aircraft that they really should have. And this is a problem that other airlines are having, too, to a certain extent. They obviously lost the use of a lot of aircraft until they got the 800 MAX in the air. But then the pandemic came along, and a lot of airlines got out of the leases that they have on the aircraft. Most of the time, airlines don't even own the airplanes that they fly. It's a very big business for people to get together in big corporations, buy airliners from Boeing or wherever, and then lease them back to an airline, because the airline doesn't really want to own them. And Southwest doesn't have all the aircraft it needs. It needs to have aircraft that are sitting on the ground places that with emergency crews they can send those planes to an airport where a plane is broken and can't fly, or where in this particular case they can't get a plane out of there, because when one of their planes doesn't, or a group of their planes can't fly, their whole system breaks down, because these airlines, these planes go from one place to another and become another flight. Airplanes are constantly in the air. An airliner that's sitting on the ground, okay, is a losing proposition money-wise. They have to fly to make money. And so they don't have the kind of reserve crews, personnel, and they don't have the kind of reserve aircraft that they need. So that when this storm hit the Northeast and went all the way from the Midwest all the way to the Northeast, they just couldn't cope. They could not reroute. They couldn't get people where they needed to get them. And so I'm sitting here in Houston where the skies are blue, but I am subject to the problems that are taking place in the Northeast and in the Midwest. And there are no planes, and there are no crews, and they can only fly so much. And it's a real problem. So I'm stuck here in Houston, Texas. They told me they could get me out on Saturday. Wow. I said that was unacceptable, so I went to United Airlines, and United Airlines had a flight, which would have cost me $1,200 a ticket, because I got Maryland with me, right? $2,400 to get home to Tampa one way on Wednesday.
Oh my God.
But if I go on Thursday, it's $240 a ticket, because by then, Southwest will be flying again, and so you can't gouge me anymore.
Right.
So I got a flight out. I get to go home on Thursday. Otherwise, I'd have been flying home on New Year's Eve at night.
Wow.
That was the flight that they had available for me. So I'm a little unhappy with Southwest Airlines. I'm a little unhappy with the way they run their airline. They don't have the ability to adapt that other airlines have. And they need to be able to do that. So the system comes to a grinding halt, and the rest of us pay the fare to get onto other airlines or other airplanes in order to get to where we need to go. Now, I will give Southwest CEO credit for one thing. He has agreed that he's going to pay for any increased fare that you have to pay to fly another airline. He's going to pay for hotels for people who are stranded places. He's going to give, but I think he's not going to give money. He's going to give what they call flight credits. That is, that it's money that you can use on their airline and only on their airline. That's what I think is going to happen. He's not talking about cash here. Or he's going to give extra points. I don't want points. Okay, you listening to me, guy? I don't want any points. I want cash. I want green and God we trust American dollars. Okay? That's what I want. Okay? You know, open up your wallet, okay? And by the way, I've been putting my resume out there if I were you, because I don't think the board of directors is going to be real happy with you come today. Just an idea. When you fix this problem, you're going to go by the way of Tua, okay, with the Dolphins. You're going to be looking for work, okay? I got something to say about him, but this isn't a sports show. All right. That's what I really think today. What about you, Brendan? What do you really think today? I know what you really think, but why don't you tell everybody else, okay?
It's not a sports show. It's an aviation show. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can have me going the whole hour on it. I'm an aviation geek, so, I mean, I'm more than happy to talk about that first.
Really?
I'm a licensed pilot,
so we have something in common on that. Okay, go ahead.
That's right. I don't have that, but I have – But I do fly a Microsoft Flight Simulator several hours a day.
Yeah, those banking turns really take it out of you. The gravity just goes right away, right? Okay.
Right. Oh God, that's. But yeah, Southwest is. You know, they've got. I was reading about them too this morning, and you know, they've also got. They're very rigid. They only fly one kind of right. They only fly 737s. I think that's the only kind of plane.
That's all they fly.
Yeah.
Well, no, they actually. So they don't. They had some seven. they had some 757s that they were flying longer routes on, but I don't know if they still have them.
Right. But, yeah, they don't have any A320s or, you know, anything like that.
No.
So, yeah, most airlines have a diverse fleet. Yeah.
And that's why they got really hurt when the 800 MAX got grounded. They got really hurt. They had to pull out. They were trying to get rid of all the 700-level ones, the 737-700s. They were trying to get rid of them because they didn't have Wi-Fi and all kinds of things in them. And they had to fly those aircraft, and they still are because they still don't have all their 800s in the air yet.
Right.
So it's a problem for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've got this business model, as you say, they keep their planes flying, right? So they have these really ridiculously short turnaround times.
Correct.
You know,
Half an hour. Half an hour.
Yeah, right. Yep.
That's all.
That's
they land, they get people
that's how
off,
long it,
and then they load them up. And they load them up.
And
it's like a bus stop.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. No, they refuel, they shut it down, they turn it back on, and off they go. And that's why Ryanair is famous for hard landings in over in Europe because they insist that their pilots get the plane down fast so that they can turn it around in 20 minutes. And anyway.
And Southwest does something that other airlines don't. They fly higher in many cases than other airliners do. And they get what's known as a direct route. For people who fly will understand this, people who don't. When you're flying in an airliner, you're flying in a highway in the sky. You're moving from one navigational beacon to another, okay? And there are air routes that you're supposed to stay on. You're supposed to be at certain altitudes. But if you can fly high, like many private jets do, like over 40,000 feet, the air traffic control can give you a direct route. They can say, okay, you can fly direct, like the bird would fly, from one point to another. So they use, even though they use a little bit more fuel to get to 40,000 feet, when they get up there, they get better fuel efficiency up there. And they also can fly faster, and they can fly direct, so that their planes a lot of times get places early. And so they have more time on the ground to do what they need to do, and they have a very good on-time record until the system breaks down. And when their system breaks down, now you're in big trouble. So they count on that, but they do a lot of stuff that other airlines don't do when they fly. It's interesting. When they tell you we're going up to 41,000 feet, you know you're going to get in early.
Yeah, right.
So be that as it may, it's a lot of fun up there.
Yeah, it is.
So VFR on top, they call it. So
okay.
So. Tell me what you
what
think.
What do I really think? All right.
Yeah.
It's probably what a lot of people are thinking or should be this morning. you know, I've got sort of a meme in my life where I ask, what kind of person? What kind of person? And whatever follows that is always something really kind of nasty and bad, right? What kind of person would X? The answer of lately when I ask the question, you know, what kind of person would X, is usually the Republican. That's what kind of person would X. It's getting hard to see where the bottom is in the souls of these people. And every time I think they can't go lower, they find a way to surprise me. And they've done it again. In the midst of the worst winter weather that we have seen in the United States for, you know, years. The Republican governor of Texas sent busloads of migrants up to Washington, D.C., where the temperature was a balmy 18 degrees Fahrenheit and emptied
That's cold.
The buses. Yes.
Yeah.
I would say so. Yeah. 18 degrees, emptied the buses onto the sidewalks near the vice president's residence. Many of them wearing nothing but, you know, pants and T-shirts. No coats, no sweaters. What kind of person, here we're back to this question, what kind of person would send busloads of living, breathing human beings to a freezing cold outpost far, far away from where they are and dump them on the streets to freeze? And the answer is a Republican. That's what kind of person. Their political stunts now have sunk to the point where they literally are putting people's lives. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised by this, right, after January 6th and all the rest. but you have to lack a soul. You have to lack empathy. You have to be an evil person. Greg Abbott, governor of Texas. Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida. I mean, you have to be evil to do something like that. And that's getting to be the difference between our two political parties. You know, one of them is completely off the rails. We can nitpick Democrats all day long about, right, that their politics are often not great. You know, their policies can be questionable. Now, but we can nitpick, right? But you don't see the Democratic Party agitating for the overthrow of the American system of government. You don't see the Democratic Party preferring authoritarianism to democracy. You don't see the Democratic Party doing things like sending human beings into the freezing cold to make a political point. I don't know what it was about that story that got to me. Even more than most of the other stories.
You know, it's disturbing in the context that the governor of the state of Texas won't even admit that this was his people because he realizes just how bad this looks. So they're not – you can't find – we know that the buses came from Texas. We know that. And, of course the governor down here has made it abundantly clear that he is responsible for some other instances like this. I'm sure he's dancing around trying to find some pack that is willing to accept responsibility because he realizes this was like really a beyond the pale. You know, I was down here in Texas I've been here since, you know, last week. And, you know, for Christmas, and it was frigging cold down here, okay? I'm going to tell you that right now. Wind chill factors are pretty close to zero, 1 or 2 degrees. Windy, the temperature's down in the teens, so you can imagine just how cold it was. I was wearing a ski jacket, you know, a three-level ski jacket, just to stay warm. And I brought it because I knew it was going to be cold. Those people didn't know it was going to be cold. And even if they did, they didn't have anything to put on their bodies to keep themselves warm anyway, had no idea they were going to be dumped out on the street. And the authorities here didn't have the decency to at least let the authorities up in D.C. know these people were coming.
Right.
There was nobody there to meet them. They sat there on the sidewalk wondering, what do I do now? I don't think they knew they were going to Washington, D.C. They didn't know they were headed up into a northeast storm. And the people, the government of Texas The state government just don't care. They think this sends a message. Here's the message that it sent, and I agree with you. It sends the message that the people of Texas, listen to me, people of Texas, because I'm sitting here in your state right now. The people of Texas don't give a damn about anybody but themselves. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If you really want to secede from the Union, sei gesund. That's Yiddish for go with God. We'll build a fence around the state of Texas. Nobody in, nobody out. Mm. Watch how fast your corporations flee. Watch how fast your oil industry goes broke. And maybe Mexico will take you back. Okay? You didn't want them. You tried to be your own country twice before and you failed. And you came to us to bail you out. And you think you can just stomp all over people. You know what? When to come here, you got to show a passport. When to come here, airliners stop using Dallas-Fort Worth as their main hub. And all of, and your economy goes into the crapper. You're going to want to come back again. Well, guess what? Third time ain't a charm. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. There ain't going to be no third time. Mexico will take you back with open arms. See, we knew you'd come back sooner or later. That's going to be their attitude. And you don't want brown people here? You aren't going to know how many brown people are going to be here if you're part of Mexico. No border left. You don't have to worry about the border. Ain't going to be no border. I agree with you. You brought us Ted Cruz. Take him with you. Please. Take my wife. Please. He won't stay here. He'll go to Cancun. He's got to live in Mexico. He might as well be in Cancun. I want to know where he was when it was cold here. You know, nobody knows where Ted Cruz is. Where in the world is Ted Cruz? Okay. So be that as it may. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, and as you mentioned when we were talking earlier, there's a reason Republicans will not sit down and work out the border problem with Democrats. Democrats have proposals to actually sort that out. Republicans need the border crisis. They need that. That's right. They need to be able to go on Fox News and talk about caravans, which they've turned into this horrifying. It's another one of their buzzwords, right? Caravans. The caravans are coming. But yeah, you're right. They need this as a wedge, and so there's nothing in it for Republicans to solve that problem. Because then they can't keep talking about it.
They call them caravans. I bet you the people from Dodge who make the caravan, they called it the caravan. They must be real happy to have their car attached to that.
Yeah, right.
Okay, the caravans are coming. What, brand new cars? Something's coming. I don't know what it is. Okay, it's just really awful.
Mm-hmm.
And they need this issue. They don't care about the people. They consider the brown people that come up from Mexico. Well, Mexicans don't come here anymore. They make more money being Mexicans and in Mexico. But the people that come up here from Venezuela and Honduras and other Central American countries, Colombia now too, the bottom line is that they don't care about them. They're fungible items.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny part is that everybody says we need those people.
Right.
They do the jobs that Americans don't want to do, like pick your lettuce, like harvest your fruit. They put their kids out. Their kids, 8, 9, 10 years old, are out in the fields picking things for you to put on your table. These are the jobs that Americans don't want to do. But these people will do anything to get away from where they are. Some of them come up here for 2 years to make some money, and then they go back home.
Yeah.
And we need – immigration has fed our economy for years for providing the workers that allow industries and businesses to expand. And you're sitting here saying, okay, the guy sitting in his home – with his six-pack, in his white beater T-shirt, watching wrestling programs on television because he thinks they're real, he doesn't want to do that work. He would rather sit there and complain that there are brown people coming to his country. Well, that's why they're coming here, because there's jobs for them to do that you don't want to do. They're the ones that work in the convenience stores. They're the people that work in the gas stations. They're the people that do the jobs that Americans won't do, that need to be done so you have a place to go get your six-pack every night when you come home.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want them here. Because eventually, if they're here legally, they might actually become like citizens. Their children might, like, actually get an education, and you're afraid they're going to take your job. Well, you know what? Maybe they deserve your job. Maybe you don't. You don't deserve that job just because you're white, pal. You just don't. So earn your job. They earn theirs. And they work for less money than you do. Wow. But the people of Texas don't want them. Well, when you secede from the Union and become part of Mexico, you can have a lot of brown people here. So, you know, make up your mind, pal.
You know, and to your to your point on now, I'm going to do the flip side of my what kind of person meme. Let's think about this for a minute. You know, as you mentioned, it's not really people from Mexico coming. It's people from Central and South America.
Mexicans. We have negative immigration from Mexico. People who got here are going back.
Yeah.
Because the jobs are better, pay more in Mexico.
Hmm.
Yeah.
They've been going
America
back since the Obama years. It's not Mexicans that are coming here. And they don't want Americans down there because America doesn't send their best. And
yeah,
I won't finish the sentence, okay?
But you're talking about people arriving at the border of the United States who have undertaken a very long journey.
Months.
Most of it.
Of walking.
Yeah, months. Yeah, that's right, of walking. And so, you know, I asked before what kind of person in a negative way, but here I'm going to ask, what kind of person does it take to give up, you know, whatever life they have, the familiar? That takes a lot. I think most of us have had this experience. You know, the familiar is very comfortable, even if it does take a special kind of chutzpah, I think you'd say. Right?
Oh, wow.
Did I use that term correctly?
Did you catch the Yiddish coming out of the guy?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah,
okay.
That's gall and temerity. Very good. Very well said.
Yes. Yeah.
Chutzpah.
Good. Okay.
I got a better definition, but go ahead.
All right.
Okay.
So, yeah. you know, you hate to romanticize things too much, but when you look at the poem, you know, at the base of the Statue of Liberty, And you talk about, you know, people who gave up their familiar surroundings, people who absolutely yearn for a better life, people who are willing to take that kind of journey, that who are willing to walk thousands of miles to get to the United States. And this is the kind of person you want to turn away? Are you out of your mind?
Because they're taking, their attitude is you're taking away from real Americans.
Yeah,
you're taking jobs.
Right.
You're going to replace us.
Right.
Well, you know what? For some of you, okay, you know when a football player isn't playing very well, what do? They replace him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When you're not playing very well and you're not doing very well and all you do is complain and you don't understand solutions, maybe it's time to replace you. These people come here from the kind of poverty that you can't even imagine, the kind of violence that you can't even imagine. They walk with children on their backs. Children who are capable of walking, walk. Some of them drown crossing rivers. And you think for some reason or another you appreciate this country more than they do? No matter how miserable you make their lives, it's better than what they came from. Think about that. No matter how miserable you make them, state of Texas, they appreciate being here more than you do. More than Ted Cruz does. I'm sorry. You don't appreciate your country. You just don't. You don't deserve it. And don't tell me you're a real American, because you know what? There's only one group of real Americans left. It's very small because we killed all the rest of them. Your people came from someplace else. Somewhere back in your past, your people came from someplace else. What makes you so much better? Because you're white? It doesn't. There's just something very wrong here. Terribly wrong here. I will take a thousand of these people over someone like this George Santos from up there in New York. Boy, we're going to get into him in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I want someone who really respects this country, who is glad to be here, who gets down and kisses the dirt because he's here or she's here. There's just something wrong with the attitude that somehow, you know, they're not worthy. They're far more worthy than you, the guy who says all I need in life is a pickup truck and a shotgun in the window and a paycheck and a six-pack. What more do you want from life? They want more from life. They want to make better for themselves and for their children. You don't. You will be the downfall of this country. Our strength has always been our diversity. Our strength has always been the people who come here who are just, it's almost orgasmic for them to walk into this country and be here. My grandparents came from Romania in the 1890s. My grandfather crossed the Detroit River from Windsor, Ontario, illegally to be in this country. There you go. I'm the grandson of an illegal alien. Okay. I guess we did okay. Among his grandchildren are three doctors, two lawyers, people who educated, got educated, and made something of themselves. How about you? What are you doing for your kid? Not much. Except for be like this guy who helped his kid kill people in up in Illinois. Got him his gun, got him his ammunition so he could go kill people. Because you taught him to hate people. There's a legacy. Sorry. Not sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of people.
Well,
and they vote Republican,
yeah.
By the way.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get that shot in.
Yeah.
I really
do. And one more thing while we're on the subject, although we could go on about it. I don't want to hear pro-life anymore. I don't want to hear that term. It's complete nonsense. If you're pro-life, then you don't send people to freeze to death on a sidewalk.
Well, there you go.
I'm sorry.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Not sorry.
Well said. Yeah.
Not sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's ridiculous to say that this is a pro-life party. Hypocrisy is overwhelming. So I want to get that in there,
people
too.
In Texas. And they execute
right.
people in
right.
Texas.
Right.
Okay, so,
right.
I mean, if their answer always is, the evangelical always says, you have forfeited your life because you've taken a life, an eye for an eye and a tooth for tooth. By the way, always misquoted, by the way. Only God has the right for an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. That's the way the Bible says it.
Mm.
But you use that quote to justify what you do. You are not the hand of God. So, you know, don't tell me you're pro-life. If every life is precious, and I hear them say, every life is precious, why are you in favor mm-hmm. of the death penalty?
Right.
I've asked that 1,000 times, never gotten an answer, other than he forfeited his life. No, nobody forfeits their life. Some people give their lives for others. But that's not forfeiting your life. So I agree with you. Stop telling me how pro-life you are. And I happen to agree with one thing they say. The federal government's got to take responsibility for this. I got to be honest. They got to start coming up with the bucks and help take care of these people themselves. The problem is you can't get Republicans to vote for the money.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Right.
Because they want these people. They want these people to come up in caravans. They want, as they put it, they're the wedge issue. We're protecting the country. Really? Okay, we can talk all day about that. But there is something else, and I brought his name up a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Hezzy, you ever hear the name George Santos?
George Santos.
Hezzy, you there?
No. I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Really? Just got elected to Congress from Long Island.
No, I didn't
Seriously?
Pay attention. I don't know what happened. Literally, I didn't
okay.
realize it.
Well, now I'm going to educate you and all the people that you talk about. Because he's a big
all
national
right.
story, this guy. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay, George Santos. How can I put this? George Santos is, we don't know if that's really his name. No, we really know that's his name, but we don't know anything else about him. Because everything
okay.
else he's ever said about himself are what? Join in here,
false?
Brendan. What are they?
Lies.
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 So that's false. They're lies. Okay?
Okay.
Let's call them what they are. Okay? This guy said he worked for Citibank. He worked for this one. He went to this college. He went to that. His entire resume is a lie. And I'm talking to you people from Long Island. Those Democrats out there who did not get out and vote, and you lost all three of your congressmen, okay, and you let the Republicans come out there and put Republicans from Long Island. I want you to know that if you had voted like you should have for Sean Patrick Maloney and the other two people, Democrats, that were running out there, Democrats would have – 216 congresspeople.
Wow.
And the margin would be 2 votes in the House. That would be the Republicans' margin. It would be 219 to 216. There's a couple other places we could have picked up some seats. Well, let's just leave it at that one. This guy comes out here and he sells you a bill of goods. Now, I blame the Democratic Party for not doing the right opposition research.
Mm-hmm.
I blame the Republican Party for this guy because he raised some money for them and somehow his fortunes turned around. He got a whole lot of money and he started raising money for the Republican Party. They never checked his background. After the election, the New York Times starts getting telephone calls from companies that he claimed that he worked for, colleges that he claimed that he graduated from. It said, we don't even know who the hell this guy is. And it turns out everything about him is a constructed and imaginary resume.
Wow.
He didn't even tell the truth of where it came from. For years, he lived in Colombia, where his mother was. And that's okay, I know people from Colombia, that's fine. Except for in Colombia, he committed criminal offenses for which he has warrants outstanding for him. He was working for some guy, he stole the guy's checkbook and bought things for himself on that checkbook, including a new pair of Ferragamo shoes, I guess.
Mm.
And then he comes here and he makes up a resume and he runs for Congress. And yesterday, after being exposed by the New York Times, he says, yes, I lied, but I'm not a criminal, which was another lie because he is a criminal. Not only that, he can get charged with fraud upon the United States government for the things he said to get himself elected to Congress. People make mistakes. These weren't mistakes. He admitted, I lied about all this stuff. I absolutely lied. Came up with a couple of excuses like, well, I worked for a company that worked for the company that worked for this, so therefore I felt like I really did work for Citibank.
Mm-hmm.
He was never employed by Citibank or any of the other companies he claimed. But he says, I lied, but I'm not a criminal. And I expect to be sworn into Congress. I'm not giving up my seat. They haven't been sworn in yet, but... And Republicans are what? I'm listening. It's as silent as could be. Crickets.
Mm.
Because they know if they don't seat this guy, it'll be a special election in New York, and a Democrat will win that seat. That's one less of their majority that they have. It's only a 4-vote majority. If they lose one of them, that's a 2-vote swing. And they know that. And so they're going to seat this guy. They won't even bring him up on ethics charges. They won't do anything to not seat him, to not accept his credentials. So the only way we're going to get rid of him is if the federal government or the state of New York charges him with fraud, convicts him, and thus he must be removed from Congress.
Mm-hmm.
He stood up there and did what he did yesterday, knowing that McCarthy has said, I will protect you, and now he has his vote, Santos's vote, to become Speaker. This is what New York, and I'm telling you people from Long Island, you are responsible.
Mm-hmm.
You're all responsible. For electing this guy as your congressperson because somehow you didn't get enough attention. Okay, you had a really good Democrat running against him, but you didn't vote. You didn't get out and vote because you didn't care. Are you caring now? Can you hear me now? Like Verizon says, can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
I hear you.
It is absurd. It is a sign of who we are and what we are that a guy like this believes that he is entitled to keep the fruits of his fraud to the detriment of the entire country.
Well, is there a mechanism for
because
somebody
he lied,
in the
but he's
state
not
of New York to get rid of him because of the falsehood?
I don't know whether they can or they can't. I'm sure that the Democratic Attorney General is looking into it now.
Mm-hmm. It'd be logical.
But he figures he can stop. He just wants to complete his term so he can get the pension.
Uh-huh.
And Republicans are going to seat him, and they're going to put him on committees. That's how low Republicans have come. They really do love criminals. I mean, you know, the titular head of their party is a criminal, at least according to a committee last week. Don't tell me you're not a criminal because you didn't get charged in the United States. You only got charged in Colombia. A crime's a crime, pal. I said a few weeks ago that the people of Long Island are as responsible as anyone for the fact that the Republicans have control over the House of Representatives. They took three seats and didn't care enough to go out and vote. And you're going to get what you deserve. Nothing.
No, they're going to get 2 years of Hunter Biden hearings. That's what they're going to get.
Hunter Biden's laptop.
Yeah.
The greatest danger to the American democracy. Mm. Really. And you know what? They're probably going to put this guy on the committee that's going to investigate Hunter Biden's laptop. Because it takes a criminal to know a criminal, right? He has a special insight into all of this. We need his expertise.
It's like that guy from that movie, Catch Me If You Can, right? With Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio played that guy.
Yeah.
It was an exaggeration of a real guy. How'd you like to be the guy that had brain surgery and this is the guy that did it? He never went to medical school. I thought I'd get something like that out of all you. I just, you know, sorry. Not sorry. Can't be. Won't be. So the hell with that. That's George Santos. Did we talk about last week about Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert having a cat fight?
I think so.
Okay. It got better.
Is it ongoing? Yeah.
It got better. It really did. Okay. I just want to put these two in a WWF ring and let them battle it out.
Mm.
Okay. All of a sudden, Marjorie Taylor Greene is the voice of reason because she supports McCarthy. And there's a reason why she supports McCarthy, because that makes her the Speaker of the House.
Right.
I mean, you know, another reason why McCarthy shouldn't be Speaker of the House. I don't know that there is a Republican can get 218 votes. How do you like that? There is no compromise candidate. The far-right people will never accept a compromise candidate that does not give them everything they want. And normal Republicans are not going to accept somebody from the far right. So whoever gets it's going to be as useless as John Boehner. That's how I describe people that are useless. You're as useless as John Boehner. An embarrassment to the state of Ohio. Where I'm from, everybody. But I just thought I'd mention that, you know, that this is what I'm going to be watching for the next couple of weeks, the next week or so, actually. I want to see where that goes. I want to see what's said on the floor. Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be so much fun. It is going to be so much fun. Really, truly a lot of fun. We got a final report.
Yep.
From the January 6th committee.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where I'm going to find the time gun. I'm going to read not only the 800 pages of the report, but I want to read every single page of everything they've released. That could probably take me all year. Okay.
Yeah.
How about you? What do you want to see out of the report? What do you want to read?
Yeah, I'm curious about a couple of the people on the committee keep talking about the footnotes. Don't skip the footnotes. So apparently there's a lot of good stuff in the footnotes. Like you, I have not had the time or the inclination over this holiday period to read 800 pages of
read the executive summary.
Yeah, even that's 160 pages. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what
do
you make of these referrals?
I think they're very symbolic.
Yeah.
I know that they voted to make the referrals. That has to be approved by Congress. There'll be something done before January 3rd during this week. There will be an adoption of the report and the referrals, but it really doesn't mean anything. I don't think Jack Smith is really going to pay much attention to it. He wants the material. He's made that abundantly clear.
Yeah.
He wants everything they got, and they've already started sending it. And he's hoping that that will tie up some loose ends for him. But I think they're working, if they haven't got him already, they're working really hard to get Mark Meadows.
Right.
He really is the key to everything. I mean, he's the key to every single player involved here. He was the quarterback. Okay? And everything went through him. He can nail every single one of them, including Donald. It's hard to imagine that he's going to let Jack Smith put him in jail for the rest of his life. Okay, Mark Meadows is acting like a tough guy, but he's not that tough. And maybe he believes, okay, so I'll do a couple of years, and a Republican will win the White House and give me a pardon. The only Republican that's going to give him a pardon that could withstand giving him a pardon is Donald Trump. Even Ron DeSantis is not stupid enough to pardon him. So I don't know what he's being, what bill of goods. And he's got a good defense lawyer. Terwilliger is a really good defense lawyer. He's one of those guys that you put on your list to call if you get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot believe that Terwilliger is not sitting there saying, man, it's time to start giving it up. You've carried this as far as you can go. Because they're going to indict you. And the question is whether you get a night, whether you agree to an information and testify or whether you go on trial. One way or the other, you're going to do time. The question is how long are you going to be there? And Terwilliger has to know that. That's why he turned over all of his messages, all his text messages. Because he knew by not doing that, he was violating the same law that his former boss violated by keeping papers and secret documents. They belong to the archives. And he knew that. So, but I think that the referrals are useless. There's nothing there that they're not already investigating. Nice to know that the committee's found them guilty, but it doesn't help any. But it made them feel better about themselves.
Yeah, and I think if your choice is do the referrals or don't, I'm glad they did. I'm tired of people walking away from Donald Trump. You know, there's always some reason, you know, not to go after him. And I'm glad that they didn't, you know, they didn't do that this time. So, but
well,
I agree with you. Legally, there's nothing to it. Right.
That's the deal with Jack Smith. Okay. Obviously, one of the things going through their heads is, you know, what are the effects of indicting a former president, and if we lose a trial, what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Doing nothing is worse, because all you are doing, there is some accountability in just being indicted.
Right.
If there's no accountability, then that's not going to stop the next guy who wants to do the stuff that Trump did. And DeSantis wants to do what Trump did. I have no doubts that DeSantis, his goal is to turn this into a fascist state. I have no doubts about that. And a theocracy. I have no doubts about that. His wife, you know, she's the brains of the outfit, by the way. And you know, she thinks he's the second coming. She's trying to make him in. Remember what I told you? God, in 6 days, God created the heavens and the earth. On the seventh day, he rested. And on the eighth day, he decided he needed a real fighter for him. So therefore, he created Ron DeSantis. She said that.
Yeah.
In a commercial. That's scary. That's some scary stuff. Okay? So... but that there's no question that he's a fascist and that he wants to create a fascist state, only he's trying to be slick about it. The only good thing is he's a terrible public speaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's an awful public speaker. And, you know,
yeah, he's always angry.
That tape of him beating up on school children behind him because they were wearing a mask. Take those masks off. Excuse me? I thought it was their choice. No. This is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. School children wearing masks, protecting themselves. So I just, you know, he scares me in the context that if he gets a Republican, if he gets control out of both houses of Congress, and he becomes president, time to move your money offshore and start looking for a new home.
Mm.
I mean that. Even today, if I won the lottery, that money's not staying in the United States. That ain't going to happen. That's why God invented Swiss banks. Okay? That's the way it goes. I'll report it. I'll put it on my income tax. I'll put it on my tax returns. But I'm going to put it where the government can't get to it.
Hmm.
If we had a fascist state, they ain't keeping my money. So, be that as it may.
Yeah.
You know? Things are about to, hell's about to break loose. By the way, here's a constitutional issue. Title 42, okay, that goes with the immigration stuff. And the government asked Roberts to keep the stay in place for a few more days. You notice there hasn't been a ruling, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen a ruling?
No.
Okay. And he ain't taking it to the whole court because he knows what's going to happen then. He's keeping it on his desk. And after Biden gets his few days, then he'll sign an order. I don't know what's going to happen in 2 days. You got a solution for this, Brendan, in 2 days?
No.
Come on, you're an idea man. You got to have something.
Yeah. No, I have ideas, but not about this. What's your idea?
Yeah, I know. Okay, we can't talk about that, people. Don't ask. Okay.
Great.
Well,
oh, God.
The clock on the wall, okay,
mm-hmm.
as they used to say, I'm laughing, the clock on the wall, okay,
yeah.
says it's 11 o'clock Eastern time, and that's the end of our hour.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But
as he's there.
So we didn't talk about hour.
Well, there's nothing really about the Constitution today, because there's nothing happening.
Yeah.
Congress isn't working. The Supreme Court clearly is not working. Okay,
yeah.
Even when it's working, it doesn't work. Okay, so there really wasn't a whole lot to talk about except for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
George Santos, I'm coming for you. I'm going to push for your removal. I want you to know that.
We got to rename this hour. Aviation and Politics Today.
At least this hour. At least this past hour.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're going to have a lot of fun, though. After the first of the year, I think we're going to have a lot of fun. Like I said, I really want a close-up of Marjorie Taylor Greene actually swearing allegiance to the Constitution.
Hmm.
Or Lauren Boebert. Or Louis Gohmert. Or Paul Gosar. How about Ted Cruz? I want to see these people actually swear allegiance to the Constitution. Out loud. And apparently each member of Congress has to say it individually. Put their hand on a Bible and do that. I want that video.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they show it on C-SPAN. So I'm going to record the whole thing. The whole C-SPAN thing. I can see it. I want to look at it. I want to hear her voice. I want to see the lips move. Okay? One can only hope that she says nothing. Or says, do you swear? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Let's call it I swear. Okay?
Oh, God.
Okay.
All right.
You got work to do, don't you, Brenda? You got work to do, right? You got meetings
we'll
and conferences and stuff like that?
No, not today.
Really?
Yeah, people leaving me alone right now. I'm thinking this
We're
week
approaching
I'll
New
mostly
Year.
Get left alone. Yeah, that's right. It's the holidays.
New Year. You need a rest. Christmas,
yeah.
Too.
Here's what a paranoid person would think.
What?
They're leaving me alone for a reason.
That'd be fine,
Ooh.
Too.
I want to know what's really going on.
If anybody wants me to go away, I'll be more than happy to oblige.
What are they doing to me behind my back
all right,
that
right.
you don't want me to know about?
Uh-huh. Right.
There you go. Take that one with you, Brendan. Okay.
Right.
That's
God.
One of the great parts about, you know, getting people pissed off at you is that you know they're paying attention. Okay.
Yeah, right.
And you know where they're coming from.
You know.
All right. Well,
and you know
I'm
my first
gonna,
rule
I,
was keep
that?
Your head down and don't get noticed, right? That's didn't work out.
And now they're playing whack-a-mole with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every time your head comes up, there's a hammer coming down on you, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We're eating into Hezzy's time. Yep.
That's okay.
Hezzy, have a great week.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
It's been a great year with you. It's been a great year.
It certainly
year.
Has.
I want you to know that.
You've made it special, believe you me.
Well, I'm looking forward to the next one, okay?
Yeah.
Assuming I can get home for it, okay?
Yeah, good luck.
All right.
Okay. Yeah,
well.
Maybe,
all right.
I may be walking.
All right.
I'll get home, okay?
Okay.
They can do it to South right. America. I can do it to Florida. Okay? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I'll talk to you later, everybody. Right.
Be well,
all right.
Guys.
Have a good week.
All the best.
Yep.
All right.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
All the best, bye. Guys.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Oh, how exciting. Boy, it doesn't get better than the Constitution today. Who would have thunk that the Constitution today would be so exciting? And it's exciting because of WMU Cooley Law Professors Brendan Beery and Jeff Swartz. Always a pleasure. So hope you'll join us again next week on Tuesday, because that's when they're on, Tuesday mornings from 10 to 11. Always a pleasure, really. Okay, let's see what we can do to cover some of the highlights of what's going on and just catch up with the news. Bear with me a second here. There's some interesting stuff with regard to Israel. Israel's clearing the way for Netanyahu's return with legal changes. It seems a long-serving former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu moved one step closer to returning to office after Israeli lawmakers approved legislation needed to seat his far-right coalition partners. So Israel's parliament approved divisive legislation on Tuesday, that's today, paving the way for the return of Benjamin Netanyahu as prime minister. The changes make it possible for Bezalel Smotrich of the religious Zionist party to serve as a minister within the defense ministry. So Israeli lawmakers also passed legislation that allows anyone convicted of offenses but not given a custodial sentence to serve as a minister. It clears the way for Aryeh Deri, he's the leader of the ultra-Orthodox Shas party, to serve as a minister despite a conviction for tax fraud. So well, it seems like in Israel, it's like it is in America. After hours of debates, 63 of the 120 parliamentarians voted in favor and 55 against the amendments. So why are the amendments so contentious? Smotrich is an ardent supporter of settlement expansion in the occupied West Bank. He would also get power over the West Bank administration and with it the lives of many Palestinians. Deri was expected to serve as finance minister for 2 years in a rotation with Smotrich. Well, Israel's Supreme Court said it would hear an appeal against Deri's appointment by a group of scientists, academics, and former diplomats called Democracy's Bastion. Well, the Knesset also moved, voted to expand the powers of the National Security Ministry or over the police, a portfolio that's set to be handed to Itamar Ben-Gvir, another far-right figure. He has a long history of incendiary rhetoric against Arabs. So Netanyahu agreed with his far-right coalition partners to make the changes to secure their backing for his new government. So what else do we know about the coalition government forming? It has taken Netanyahu almost 2 months since he won the election to reach deals with his allies who have demanded a significant share of power in return for their support. He's expected to swear in his new government on Thursday, that's in 2 days, one that is widely considered one of the most right-wing in the country's history. So Israel's former Prime Minister Yair Lapid said that after the legal changes so far, that the new government had already proven to be, quote, the most corrupt ever, even before he was sworn in. So this is going to be very, very interesting to see where all this goes. So this is going to be really, really fascinating. Okay. Well, let's look and see what else is going on. Wanted to check this out with you. Okay. The question is, what's in store for emerging Asian economies in 2023? It seems that many countries' economies in the region could be in for a bumpy ride, next year, but some may also be set to benefit as companies diversify from China. South and Southeast Asian economies have had a challenging 2022, a year when the global economy was supposed to have recovered from the ill effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. Instead, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, coupled with continued supply chain snags, recurring COVID lockdowns in China, and soaring inflation, among other problems, have dampened growth prospects and caused economic pain to businesses and households. The aggressive hiking of interest rates by the United States Federal Reserve to control surging inflation has also led to a depreciation of a number of Asian currencies vis-a-vis the U.S. dollar. And this has worsened some nations' debt troubles, eroding their purchasing power, and prompted their central banks to raise rates accordingly to prop up their currencies. Well, the rising costs for imports of food and fuel, among other goods, have depleted the foreign exchange reserves of some countries and triggered economic crises. In South Asia, Sri Lanka and Pakistan have already received assistance from the International Monetary Fund after falling into debt distress and facing balance of payments difficulties. Experts predict a challenging economic environment in 2023 amid weakening growth prospects all around for the United States, the Eurozone, and China, and tightening financial conditions. The World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the Asian Development Bank have all downgraded growth forecasts for developing Asia. The trade-oriented economies like Singapore, Thailand, Vietnam, and Malaysia are set to be especially affected by the slower global expansion, according to predictions. Alicia Garcia Herrero, she's a chief economist for Asia Pacific at the investment bank Natixis, said that growth in the region will be dragged down by weaker external demand and tighter monetary conditions. As external demand softens, exports are starting to sag, and we expect further weakness in the coming year, she noted, pointing out that trade-driven economies such as Malaysia and Vietnam are already contracted in November. So Rajiv Biswas, Asia Pacific chief economist at Standard & Poor's Global Market Intelligence, shares a similar view. He said that manufacturing exports from the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, the ASEAN, are facing increased headwinds in 2023 amid recessionary conditions in the United States and Europe and weak domestic demand in China. ASEAN economies such as Malaysia, Singapore, and Thailand are expected to show moderate economic growth in 2023, helped by continued expansion in domestic demand, albeit moderating. So will lifting the COVID-19 restrictions boost China? China, the largest economy in the region, is also expected to record slow growth in 2023, with the ADB recently cutting its projection for the country to 4.3% from 4.5%. The Asian giant economy has been hit hard by stringent coronavirus restrictions, as well as a crisis in its massive property sector, with developers defaulting on loans and struggling to raise cash after Beijing imposed widespread lending curbs in 2020. Beijing has attempted to boost growth by slashing key interest rates and pumping cash into the banking system. Additionally, China this month abruptly abandoned its zero COVID policy after years of on and off lockdowns, mass testing, long quarantines, and restrictions on people's movements. So while some restrictions remain in place, there is some hope that as China lifts the strict containment measures, domestic demand will revive in the world's second largest economy, and this should also help some tourist-reliant Asian countries like Thailand. ASEAN tourist arrivals are still shy of the pre-COVID due to the lack of Chinese tourists, Herrero said. While we do not expect Chinese tourists to return to ASEAN as much as pre-COVID, one would expect that there will be a lift should China open up. Biswas also pointed out that the reopening of the international borders in many Asia-Pacific countries during 2022 has already allowed a gradual restart of international tourism. But momentum is expected to build significantly during 2023 as economies with large international tourism sectors such as Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, and the Philippines, he predicted. So will India's economy buck the trend? India, the region's second largest economy, is also facing headwinds amid rising interest rates and a global trade slowdown. Meanwhile, elevated crude oil and gas prices have contributed to a deteriorating trade balance. Consumer inflation, meanwhile, has consistently overshot the central bank's 2-6% target range, forcing the Reserve Bank of India to hike interest rates multiple times this year, pushing borrowing costs up to pre-pandemic levels. While continued economic expansion at a pace of 5.3% year-on-year is forecast for the 2023 to 2024 financial year, with tighter monetary policy settings and weaker external demand acting as a drag on economic growth, said Biswas. Herrero said India faces a few challenges in the coming year, pointing to tighter liquidity conditions, weakening exports, and decelerating growth momentum. We expect India's gross domestic product growth to slow to 6.3% year on year in 2023 from 6.9% in 2022, she said. So companies are diversifying from China. Experts say that companies will continue to diversify their investments away from China in 2023 to avoid the supply chain disruptions witnessed this year and amid growing geopolitical tensions between Beijing and the West. Some ASEAN nations are likely to benefit from this trend. Total FDI inflow data, which include not just cross-border mergers and acquisition flow, but also greenfield investment, shows a surge of foreign direct investment into India, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Vietnam in 2022, said Herrero. We expect this trend to continue even as China gradually lifts zero COVID restrictions, providing a boost of not just capital inflow, but also headcount demand to the ASEAN and India region. So this is going to be mind-boggling, and we'll see how that affects everything, because it's going to be a major, major issue. This is going to be very interesting as well. You'll find there's an escape from conscription. Teams of Russian deserters are moving in Germany. After the order of partial mobilization in Russia this September, hundreds of thousands of Russians decided to leave the country. Some have sought refuge in Germany. Shortly after Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered partial military mobilization in his speech on September 21, long lines of Russians eager to leave the country formed at the borders. Exact numbers remain unclear, but some reports estimated that hundreds of thousands fled the draft that would force them to serve in the war in Ukraine, with some of those who left Germany has become a destination, and a handful of those people were spoken to by Deutsche Welle when they made it to Germany, along with volunteers who helped such refugees. I didn't want to play with my fate. A guy by the name of Ilya, who lived in Yekaterinburg and worked in the car business. On September 21, he saw Putin's speech while at work. Afterwards, I immediately packed my things and resigned because I am among those who are normally the first to be called up. I am a sniper, commander of a combat vehicle, and gunner of a grenade launcher. I am also required to report myself within 38 hours of being ordered to mobilize. It was clear to me what it means to live in Russia. I didn't want to play with my fate. A nuclear physicist by training, Ilya joined the Russian army to do his military service after graduating from university. I thought the army was something powerful, strong, and great, but I met complete chaos there. In the army, I realized a lot of things, including about our politics, he says. All of his responsibilities existed only on paper, and he says that he was taught nothing in the army. As a soldier, he would be absolutely useless now, he adds. From work, Ilya, from work, Ilya drove to his dacha to avoid going home where he is registered. He called his girlfriend, and she helped him find two other men with whom he could go to Kazakhstan together. By September 22, the men had left the Sverdlovsk Oblast in the Ural Mountains and were at the border by early morning. There was already a huge traffic jam. We talked to people in line. Everyone was supporting each other, Ilya recalls the border. The Kazakh official asked with a grin where we were going. We made up the story beforehand. We were going to the mountains to see the snow. The border guard started laughing, and we laughed too. The three men spent a few more days in Kazakhstan. Then Ilya flew to Cologne, where he applied for asylum. I've already been to Germany twice. I like the mentality of the Germans, their quiet lifestyle and friendliness. If I can stay in Germany and work or study, I will learn German. I would like to stay very much, he says. Then there's another one. Olga, I want nothing to do with state politics. Olga fled from Russia to Germany on September 26, also unwilling to wait for the draft. She worked as an epidemiologist in Moscow and had registered with the draft board after graduating from university in 2020. Hold on a split second. 1 second. Okay. 1 minute. Okay. 1 second.
All right. 1 second. Coming. Okay, there was a moment, almost there.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, I didn't expect a delivery today, but evidently it did arrive. Okay, well, you get the impression of what's going on then with Russians. They're leaving the country. They don't want to serve in the military, and they realize the sham that Russia has turned out to be. And they are learning it all from the inside, which is really fascinating because we never learned that here in the United States. I don't know why America always seemed to balance the prowess of America with the prowess of Russia, and Russia has proved itself to be a paper tiger, if that at all. It is absolutely amazing. They're just murderers who want to obliterate Ukraine because they feel they can. Unbelievable. So just crazy. Well, let's go to Argentina because something very important has happened there. The 131st baby stolen during the Argentina's dictatorship has been identified. It seems the military regime systematically took babies away from political prisoners, many of whom were disappeared or executed. A group of grandmothers has been working to reunite these lost children with their biological families. Amazing when you come to think about it. Unbelievable. And let's look at what's happening around Russia. So how is the war affecting life in Latvia? It seems the war in Ukraine is being viewed with a particular fear in the tiny Baltic state. Like Ukraine, they were once part of the Soviet Union and fear Russia might try to annex their territory too. So it's just frightening what's going on. It is amazing. Well, let's look at some other things with regard to Russia's Ukraine war, because it was based on a disastrous miscalculation. British historian Mark Galeotti explains why the West did not believe Russia would invade Ukraine and how he sees the war playing out in 2023. So there have been four wars since Vladimir Putin became Russian president, and Chechnya, Georgia, Syria, Ukraine. So why does Mark Galeotti think the West was surprised by the Russian invasion? So Mark Galeotti says, I think it's because of the scale. There's only 3 years of Putin's reign, all the way from the end of 1999 to today, in which Russia was not engaged in one war or another. And yet, there had always been limited ones. Putin had always essentially picked targets that he thought he could win easily. And the fundamental misunderstanding was not to realize the degree to which Putin had convinced himself that Ukraine would be an easy victory rather than, in fact, as it turned out, to be a disastrous miscalculation. Another question in his book, he says, like many, were surprised by the decision to invade. And the question is, do you think it had something to do with Putin's isolation during the pandemic? And was this information bubble becoming too dangerous or too small? So he explains that, let me pull back to my earlier assumption, which was that until we saw that televised meeting of the Security Council in the week of the invasion, it was only 30% to 40% likely, precisely because it didn't seem to make sense. Right up to that point, in many ways, Putin was winning. He'd assembled this huge force on Ukraine's borders, and the presence of that force without crossing the borders was causing serious harm to the Ukrainian economy. And it was also leading to a stream of important leaders from the West traveling to Moscow, putting Putin in the position he likes to be, as they were petitioning him to not start a war. There was also pressure on Kyiv to make concessions. He was winning right up to the border. Now we know much more about the scale of the misunderstanding about the degree in which Putin had convinced himself that Ukraine was not a real country, that the Ukrainians would not meaningfully resist, that the so-called drug addict Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, would either flee or be captured. All these fundamental calculations or miscalculations were really at the heart of this war. And it also generates a clear image of the degree to which Putin has created a system in which it is disadvantageous for people to tell him the truth. The degree becomes clear to which his intelligence officers, everyone around him, was telling him not what he needed to hear, but what he wanted to hear. Well, speaking of intelligence, with regard to Russia's Secret Service, why do people think that they misinformed him, and are they not as good as they're made out to be? So the answer is, good intelligence gathering capabilities are regrettably still there. There are certainly smart analysts, but I think back to 2015, I remember talking to a former Foreign Intelligence Service officer who had said this 7 years ago, even then he said, look, we've learned you do not bring unwelcome news to the Tsar's table. In other words, it is politically dangerous to tell Putin things he does not want to hear. This culture of insulating the president from inconvenient truths has emerged, and most of the time it doesn't matter because he's not someone who is really in command of every single detail of running the country. There is a huge body of technocrats and officials, some of whom are highly effective, who are managing relations within the country. Where it matters is where they have a key decision that he will make. He will initiate, he will push, can then drag the whole country into this kind of disaster. And the question is, has Russia failed to achieve its war objectives? And the answer is absolutely. Frankly, the only question left is what defeat will look like. Putin is still hoping that he can outlast Ukraine and the West by signaling that this is not a war which is going to go on for a long time, that he can, if necessary, continue to throw Russian manpower into the conflict. He's laying down a challenge to the West, saying you're continuing to send billions of dollars, euros, and pounds into Ukraine to keep this going when, frankly, you know we can do this as long as you want. That is really his last hope of trying to achieve something that he can spin politically as a victory. But the point is they failed to take Kyiv. They failed really to expand their control over the Donetsk and Luhansk regions. They have the Crimean corridor, but that is now under threat. And obviously, they've already had to withdraw from Kherson. This is not the story of momentum being in the on the Russian side, quite the opposite. And as we look forward, Ukraine is increasingly fielding a modern 21st century army, thanks to all the assistance from the West, while in many ways, Russia's military is degrading. It's going back to being a late Soviet army, fought by half-trained soldiers with weapons built in the 1970s. That is not to underplay the capacity. Russia is a large country. It has a huge defense industrial complex. It can continue this war, but frankly, it is not going to be able to make major offensives that really will push back the Ukrainians for any length of time. And then another thing is about the Russian criminal world. We're seeing how Russia is trying to push prisoners to fight for Russia in Ukraine. We see people like Evgeny Prigozhin with his Wagner mercenary group fighting in Ukraine. And what does that tell us about the state of the Russian army? Well, we should note that Joseph Stalin recruited a lot of prisoners from the Gulag system. So again, this is not entirely unprecedented, but it does say two things. One is, you are right about the desperation for manpower. There is one more potential source of additional soldiers, which is the conscripts within the military. But Putin is aware that that would be politically disastrous and lead to massive draft dodging. So there is a political challenge to find new soldiers to be able to throw into the front line. And it is a marked desperation that they are turning to the prison system. But more broadly, I think that we're seeing is a long-established and formal alliance, shall we say, between the Kremlin and organized crime, taking a new form because we're also seeing, for example, organized crime being used as an instrument outside Russia's borders. So what are the projections for 2023? Can this war end next year? And if so, how? It can end, and really it will depend on the Ukrainians being able to make considerable progress on the battlefield. At present, there are no real grounds for negotiations because the Ukrainians feel they're on a roll. They would like to negotiate from a position of strength, if at all. Putin is desperately hoping that he can drive this out and hoping that come spring, he'll have between 150,000 additional reservists who have been trained in Russia and in Belarus, and that by adding them, he can reinforce his lines in his line in Ukraine. But the point is, again, this is a war that has very much defied expectations in the past. Imagine that the Ukrainians, who have not only outfought, but also outthought their Russian counterparts, will be planning further major offensives. And I think it's only if they can demonstrate that they are going to win on the battlefield that they will have any chance of seeing the Kremlin feel it has to talk in any meaningful way. So we're going to have to see where all of this goes. It's absolutely mind-boggling where things are going. But we'll see. Now let me just look up a couple of other things that you might find interesting. We really should cover this. The blizzard for the ages is wreaking havoc, that's for sure. Snowstorm Elliott has claimed at least 50 lives in the United States so far. Thousands of households are without power. The authorities are not yet giving the all clear. So we'll just have to see where all that goes, because I'm really not quite sure where it will go. So let's hope we can get out of it. We're supposed to get warmer temperatures by the end of the week, even as high as the 50s, no less. So it's going to be really fascinating. And I don't know how that's going to affect everybody, because it's going to be dangerous to have that change in weather. Probably a lot of people are going to get sick because of it as well. Okay, so let me just look at some other things that you may find interesting. We'll try to cover this. Bear with me a moment. One second here. All right. All right, bear with me a moment. All right, one second. Well, this is very, very interesting. In Taiwan, Taiwan is going to extend compulsory military service to 1 year, citing the threat from China. Taiwan will extend its compulsory military service from 4 months to a year, starting in 2024. President Tsai Ing-wen said today, as a self-ruled island faces China's military, diplomatic, and trade pressure. Taiwan, which split from the mainland in 1949 during a civil war, is claimed by China. The decades-old threat of invasion by China into the self-governed island has sharpened since China cut off communication with the island's government after the 2016 election of Tsai, who is a member of the Democratic Progressive Party and seen by Beijing as pro-independence. China's People's Liberation Army's in particular has stepped up its military harassment of Taiwan, sending fighter planes and Navy vessels toward Taiwan on a near daily basis in recent years. In response, the island's military actively tracks those movements, which often serve as a training for its own military personnel. The longer military service applies to men born after 2005 and will start January 1 of 2024. And those born before 2005 will continue to serve 4 months, but under a revamped training curriculum aimed at strengthening the island's reserves forces. No one wants war, Tsai said. This is true of Taiwan's government and people and the global community. But peace does not come from the sky, and Taiwan is at the front line of the expansion of authoritarianism. The plan sets Taiwan up for increasing its defense capabilities, but what remains to be seen is how well the defense ministry will carry out the reforms, said Arthur Jinsheng Wang, a defense expert at Taiwan Central Police University. So Taiwan's current four-month military conscription requirement was widely panned by the public as being too short and not providing the training that professional soldiers actually need. The government has slashed it down from a year to 4 months in 2017 as it was transitioning the army into an all-volunteer corps. Taiwan's 188,000-person military, 90% are volunteers and 10% are men, doing their required 4 months of service. So we'll have to see where all that goes. Unbelievable. One second. We got problems in Serbia. It seems that Serbia places its troops on the Kosovo border on combat alert as tensions escalate. Serbia yesterday placed its security troops on the border with Kosovo on the full state of combat readiness, ignoring NATO's calls for calming down of tensions between the two wartime Balkan foes. Serbia's Interior Minister, Bratislav Gašić, said he, quote, ordered the full combat readiness, end quote, of police and other security units, and that they be placed under the command of the Army Chief of Staff according to their operational plan. He said in a statement that he acted on the orders of Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić so that all measures be taken to protect the Serbian people in Kosovo. It was not immediately clear what this order meant on the ground, as Serbian troops have been on alert for a while on the border with Kosovo. Officials claim alleged harassment of Kosovo Serbs by ethnic Albanians who are a majority in the breakaway province that declared its independence in 2008. Earlier on Monday, NATO-led Berth said they were investigating a shooting incident in a tense northern region of Kosovo, urging calm as Serbia's top military officials inspected their troops on the border in a show of combat readiness. The incident on Sunday evening took place in Zubin Potok, a town where local ethnic Serbs have been manning a road barricade for the past 2 weeks and where tensions have been running high. The peacekeepers, known as KFOR, said the incident happened near one of their patrols involving unknown people. A statement said no one was injured and, quote, we are working to establish all the facts, end quote. Serbia's defense minister and the army's chief of staff traveled to the border with Kosovo, praising the combat readiness of Serbian troops and their firepower, including howitzers and other military hardware. Serbia, which has been armed through Russian donations and military purchases, has been saber-rattling and threatening force against its former province for a long time. Kosovo remains a potential flashpoint in the Balkans. Years after the 1998-1999 war that ended with NATO intervention. Serbia doesn't recognize the 2008 Declaration of Independence of its former province, while Western efforts to mediate the solution so far have failed. It's important for all involved to avoid any rhetoric or action that can cause tensions and escalate the situation, KFOR said in a statement. We expect all actors to refrain from provocative shows of force and to seek the best solution to ensure the safety and security of all communities. Fears of violence have soared since the start of Russia's war in Ukraine. The United States and most European Union countries have recognized Kosovo's independence, while Serbia has relied on Russia and China in its bid to maintain claim to the province. While the rising tensions involve several issues amid international efforts, step up mediation efforts. Most recently, ethnic Serbs in the north put up roadblocks in protest of an arrest of a former Serb police officer. Serbs in the north previously had walked out of Kosovo's institutions, claiming harassment by Kosovo authorities. Belgrade repeatedly has warned it would protect local Serbs with all means, quote-unquote, if they are attacked. Kosovo's government has asked NATO troops, which deployed in 1999, after the Transatlantic Alliance bombed Serbia into leaving Kosovo to remove the Serb roadblocks. And Prime Minister Albin Kurti, one second. All right, we'll see if we can get there. And, okay, so the rising tensions involve several issues. And the Serbs on Sunday held a top-level meeting after the shooting incident, and the Army Chief of Staff are later heading to the southern town of Raška near Kosovo, where Serbian army troops were located. The local media returned or carried a series of video with shots and shouts heard, but not showing clearly what had transpired on the road. Anyway, so that's the story there. Let me just quickly see if there's anything else that we could share with you. 1 minute here. Well, Pope Francis, of course, is pleading for the end to the senseless Ukraine war in his Christmas message. And tearing ourselves away, Ukrainians are breaking with the Russian Orthodox Christmas tradition. Unbelievable. Just quickly look at this. In a small Orthodox church in Ukraine, some 20 kilometers from the Russian border, the congregation chose to celebrate Christmas on December 25 rather than the traditional January 7, their way of protesting Russia's invasion of Ukraine. "I don't want anything to do with those who bombard our country and massacre our children," said one worshiper. The church's priest, Father Gennady Goncharov, 70 days in his basement to escape the bombardments during the Russian occupation of his village, said, "They brought the horror, death, and ruin. I don't want to be associated with a patriarch and a clergy that despise us and wish us dead," said Goncharov, referring to Patriarch Kirill, the leader of the Russian Orthodox Church, which marks Christmas on January 7. "We are tearing ourselves away from this imperial domination. Now that we're free, we can say that we're independent from Moscow's Orthodox Church," as he said. Some of those who came to the church in Bogudukiv prayed for their family members caught up in this conflict. Others prayed that victory would come soon. Unbelievable. Can you imagine? Now the churches are split. Amazing. But it seems very logical when you come to think of it. Anyway, that's our story here. So we'll speak to you tomorrow on Wednesday. Hopefully the weather will warm up a little bit. There's a lot of snow, more snow coming up in the north part of the state. And let's just hope for the best. So thanks again, folks. And we'll speak to you tomorrow. Be well. I think we'll be doing a show tomorrow. I'm not quite sure. I'm so backlogged, to be honest with you. So we'll see what we can do. Take care and be well. Goodbye.